Ladies and gentlemen, and fellow golfers, for your entertainment.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa, brought to you by the Hagen Oaks Golf Super Shop, America's most awarded golf facility. Naturewood Home Furnishings, where it's all about choices and always about quality.
Hello, everyone. Welcome into another edition of the Golf to Go Radio Hour here on Sacktown Sports 1140. Hi, everyone. I'm Frank LaRosa. Scott Marsh is with me as always. And Scott, we're going to talk about golf for a while here.
That's a good thing. I always like talking about golf.
You know, on the show today, Josh Sands is a nationally recognized golf writer. He writes for Golf Magazine, and we're going to talk about some of his career, how he got to where he got, and he's always got some interesting stories. And it's interesting that as a Northern California golf writer, that you know maybe our paths have crossed, but probably on opposite sides of the room. So I'm looking forward to talking to him.
Yeah, he's a fascinating guy, very bright person. It'll be a great interview. And of course, he does the list that everybody knows him famous for, kind of like the David Letterman top 10. So I look forward to talking about that as well.
You are right. Mark Atterbury, North California rep. We've talked to him many times about Cleveland and Strixon. He also reps for MGI, which is a motorized golf cart. And I think that's a fascinating subject, especially this time of year. I know you like to walk, and yeah. And sometimes you carry your bag, but maybe this is an opportunity to learn more about why a motorized cart makes sense.
I think it makes a lot of sense, because I think there's a lot of people in our audience who would prefer to walk, but they just don't want to carry a bag at the same time. And this could be the ideal solution. So I'm really interested to hear more about it.
Pete, the Pete Dye course that I played in Palm Springs, we weren't able to hook up with the golf pro. David Curtis is the PGA teaching professional. He actually is up here in our area right now doing a teaching session at Yochidihi, and he's got a couple more. So we'll talk a little bit about that golf course and reminisce a little bit about my trip to Palm Springs and find out more about the teaching seminars he's doing through the rest of the summer.
That sounds great. And if he ever needs us to play Yocha with him, I'm available, Frank, just saying.
You know, I think that he needs to know that. You're absolutely right. So we have a lot on tap for the Golf to Go Radio Hour. And as always, we have to pay some bills. So let's take a moment for a couple of messages, and we'll be back with Mr. Josh Sands right after this.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sacktown Sports.
Welcome back into the Golf to Go Radio Hour here on Sacktown Sports 1140. Hi, I'm Frank LaRosa along with Scott Marsh. And Scott, we have a gentleman that is one of a breed that gets less and less every day, golf writers, certainly on a regional basis. When I started doing this so many years ago, there was a huge group of us, and you know, you can kind of count us on a couple of hands at this point. But Josh Sands is a nationally recognized golf writer for Golf Magazine. He's also a restaurant critic for San Francisco Magazine. And when he wasn't doing all of that, he co-authored a book with Sammy Hagar called How Are We Having Fun Yet? And Josh, with that background, I got to believe you're having fun. Welcome into the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. I should say that I gave up the restaurant gig just prior to the pandemic, so my cholesterol is much lower and my deadlines are fewer, but still follow it loosely.
Yeah, that's good. I've seen your name in print so many times, especially on the golf.com website and the magazines and so on and so forth. And I'm always fascinated by how people kind of get to where they are. You know, we all kind of arrive somewhere, you know, together, but we all have different paths. So how did you get started in what you're doing? You mentioned that you're a Boston native, but how'd you get to the West Coast, and how'd you start writing?
Well, I'll try to give you the Cliff Notes version. After college, I moved to Portugal, and I was teaching English, and I started working because I spoke Portuguese. I started working for the bureau chief of UPI, the old wire service back there, basically fetching coffee. fell in love, you know, like so much in any person's life. It was like chasing somebody across the world. So met a Spanish woman who was moving to California, followed her. She left, I stayed. I'm grateful for having her get me out here. And so you want me to continue? I can continue rambling on. I thought I was going to go into State Department work, Foreign Service work. I went to UC Berkeley graduate school, hated academia, took an elective in journalism, was reminded of the time at UPI and the fun I had there, and went to journalism school, and then started on a newspaper and radio career. I used to write scripts for Charles Osgood, the old radio guy, and I was a columnist. Wow. I was a columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle, and that's how I fell into golf. If you saw my swing, you would quickly see that I did not grow up playing golf. And while working for the Chronicle, I wrote a kind of man bites dog column, three dots kind of stuff, you know, very Herb Cain light. I wouldn't even hazard to call myself, you know, compare myself to him, but I was writing kind of quirky items in the news. And a buddy told me about a high Tibetan Lama who was a golf addict. And I ended up meeting up with him. We had a pretty hilarious day on the course, and the story turned out to be this sort of comic adventure with this Caddyshack-like figure who was a high Tibetan monk but cheated at golf, and, you know, he was an over-the-top figure. That got picked up by Golf Digest, and that was in the early 2000s, and, you know, I was never intended to become a golf writer, but I sort of fell into it sideways.
That's amazing. Do you remember, you know, I think back to the first story I ever wrote that you know, that I got paid for. Do you remember the first story that you got paid for and you kind of thought, well, I've arrived?
The first story I remember getting paid for was a freelance piece for the East Bay Express, I think it was, or maybe it was the East Bay Monthly. It was a story about a guy who collected grease from restaurants and rendered grease and what they did with rendered grease from restaurants, turning it into beauty products and this and that. And it was my introduction. Well, you know, I'd always thought, prior to getting into journalism, I had the snobs look at the media, view of the media. I thought journalism is shallow. It's tabloid. There's not a lot of thought going on. But when I got to Cal and started doing during journalism school, I realized the reporters and the aspiring reporters I was surrounded by were the most interested, curious, open-minded people I'd ever met. And so, you know, doing a story on, say, Greece, for example, just gave me a small taste of the broad world that is journalism that so often gets discredited, that so often gets, you know, kicked around these days. But it is a great field when it's done right. And it allows you to just to explore the world and to never have the same day twice.
So you mentioned that that your game is probably not what some people would expect of a golf writer. I think that I'm probably in that same category as well. And I think that, you know, anybody that plays golf always wants that next day to be better, and they always want to be better. What is it about the game that attracted you? I mean, you kind of got, you know, kind of led into it with what you started writing, but now that you're involved in the game, what is it that kind of gets your juices flowing?
Yeah, I mean, I think at first it was that classic story of the golfer getting hooked on the first good shot, you know, the feeling of like swishing a jumper from the top of the key, that sort of magical feeling. And all the cliches that people talk about with golf appeal to me, something you can stay competitive with, you know, throughout your life. You can do it. It's one of the few things you can do forever and never get better. But to me, this sounds corny, but to me, golf, and it's been true in my career, the best thing about it is the people that you meet and the places it takes you. I've never found the professional game to be anything remotely close to the most interesting part of golf, with the exception of a few tournaments and a few players. And my career in golf writing has mostly been about sort of finding the far-flung and quirky corners where golf and life intersect. And so for me, that's been the most appealing part of golf. It's played everywhere, well, in a lot of places. And the people who play it are usually a lot, not the characters you might expect. Certainly not the characters of caricature, of country club caricature.
Who's the most memorable character you've interviewed?
Well, that high Tibetan Lama was pretty memorable, gosh, you know, there was a founder of a tournament in Las Vegas called the Fat Boy Open, where the foursomes were required to weigh more than 1,200 pounds combined. I think he was 580 pounds. There was, I'll always remember, like, the manager of a golf club in North Korea. You're talking to the guy who finished third in the North Korean Open. So, yeah, asking him about, you know, Kim Jong-il's, you know, epic 34 under round that he shot with 18 holes in one and all that. That was interesting. Met a lot of them. I mean, and, you know, I think of like the caddy at Prestwick in Scotland where I played, where he was so drunk and hungover, and his back was so bad that I wound up carrying the bag for him. He asked me to, you know, I said he looked so sort of dissipated and broken down. I said, do you want me to help you out there? And he said, yeah, absolutely. And so I carried the bag and he just walked around and slept on the tees as we played. So anyway, to me, that's the charm of golf. Golf, you know, a press conference with Tiger Woods, I mean, that'll put me to sleep every day. But, you know, watching Tiger Woods play, sure, that's interesting. But, you know, the players themselves are, to me, less compelling than the average guy or gal you meet at the Muni or when you're traveling someplace unexpected where golf is played.
Absolutely. And I think we forget the fact that everybody does have a story. You know, some are more compelling than others, but deep down, someone's got something that would be of interest to others, because basically it's all universal.
Absolutely. Yeah. No. A lot of times people will tell you they don't want to talk to you, and then you start talking to them. I'm sure you've had that experience, and you realize how many interesting stories they have to tell. And the more they talk, the more they share. And if you're open to hearing someone's story, we used to do a column when I worked for the Oakland Tribune, where we would just, back in the days of phone books, we would just randomly pick somebody out of the local phone book and call them and ask them if we could profile them. And, you know, 9 out of 10 people would say, no, who are you? You creep and hang up. But 1 out of 10 would say yes. And you'd go there and you'd find these amazing stories just in the local community. And that, to me, is what the best of journalism can be. And it's what the best of golf writing can be, too. The tournament coverage, fine. But, you know, give me the unexpected story any day.
Scott, I think that, again, mentioning that these are all universal. These are things that you run into when you're, you know, interviewing basketball players or, you know, the football team at UC Davis.
No doubt, there's so many great stories that go unwritten or untold, and those are the things that you really love to bring out. I am interested, though, in terms of like with the PGA or even LIV or just individual players, what does fascinate you in terms of what might be going on at the professional level? What are some of the things that do kind of keep you engaged a little bit?
Well, yeah, and I shouldn't make it sound like I'm just totally dismissive of the tour.
I just emphasize. But what are the things that really get you motivated?
Obviously, the rise of LIV has been a fascinating phenomenon the past couple of years. It's, you know, for some people, it's been disturbing. For others, it's been sort of illuminating. And I think what's been interesting to me is to see the way that the LIV divide and the fierce opinions that it's spurred has sort of mirrored the political divide in our country, and the way that golf sort of reflects a broader debate that's going on. That's been really interesting. I mean, watching a player like Rory McIlroy, someone who's very open and forthright with fans and introspective, is always compelling to me. So I like watching something like that. Watching Rory struggle at the Masters was kind of darkly fascinating, because clearly here's a guy who's got all the skills, but doesn't need a swing coach for that, needs a psychiatrist couch. And that's compelling. Sorry, my thing is chirping there. Open and get me stop that. So I find that really interesting. And what's going to happen with the future of the game? I mean, LIV has exposed a lot of real weaknesses with the PGA Tour and a lot of problems that the tour has. And the way that the tour is adjusting, I think, is good for the most part. But we still haven't seen everything shake out. And I think with these designated events that have left some other tour events behind, you're going to start to see this have and have not divide on the tour get greater and greater. And there's going to be a lot of questions for how sustainable certain events are, how attractive they are, and that'll prompt another continued shakeup. So we're watching things happen evolve quickly.
Yeah, there's no question about that. Obviously, you're known for the listicles list that you put together. Can you kind of tell everybody out there how that came about and how you go about putting those together?
Well, I mean, you know, the rise of the internet has changed journalism so much. You see it in every media platform that writing lists with different angles has become just a way to generate content. That sounds cynical, and I hate using the word content. It just sort of cheapens it all. But at the same time, you know, you can convey, if you've done it well, some interesting information to people. And for golf, you know, that can be helpful, whether it's, you know, helping somebody plan a buddy's trip or writing etiquette lists or do's and don'ts, or I've fallen into writing an agronomy column that was shockingly popular. I didn't realize it, but I think it was when we were coming out of the pandemic, I wrote something about what it takes to care for a golf course that's being unmaintained. And I just always assumed, hey, you could just go back to mowing the golf course and, you know, get it back up and running the next day. But you can't. It's more complicated than that, which in turn led to a question about how golf care relates to lawn care, which then led to a column that connects superintendent's work and home yard care, which sounds eye-glazing maybe, but we were shocked to find out how many people care so passionately about their lawns that we started joking we should turn golf.com into a home lawn care site instead. We might even get more traffic.
You know, I got to tell you that your lists have been, basis for thought-provoking discussions with the radio show and with other things I do on the station, because it does get people thinking about things. As you say, you know, who would have known that, how do I care for my lawn would become such a, you know, such a, an interesting topic and concept. But every time we think we expect what the audience is going to want, we sometimes get fooled. Huh?
Yeah. Interviewing all these superintendents, you know, as much as we talk about grass and course care and fixing divots, what we found out that the thing that people most like to read is when superintendents were grousing about golfers, the things that, you know, the top 10 things that drive superintendents crazy that golfers do. So, you know, a lot of times you're sort of repackaging similar material, but casting it in a different way. And when you're scolding people, that seems to get their interest.
We live in an incredible part of the world. You're based in Oakland, and in here in Northern California, the golf courses are just phenomenal. What's your favorite, and what's on your bucket list that you haven't played?
Ooh, in California, I've probably played most of them that I'm dying to play. I'm really excited about what's going on at Karika Park out here in the East Bay. You guys probably know about it, that it's been a multi-phase renovation of a long-standing course. They reopened the South Course some years ago. The North Course was stalled by a bunch of lawsuits, but news just came out today that the legal matters are behind them, and they're getting ready to complete the North Course or get back to work on the North Course. To me, Karika has been a game changer for East Bay golf, for Muni golf. It's kind of country club conditions on the greens, firm and bouncy and a lot of fun. And it sort of changed the game because there are a lot of people like me who love playing golf who can't afford the initiation fees these days at Bay Area golf clubs. And it's just opened up all sorts of new options. But bucket lists, gosh, you know, I hate to admit this, but I've yet to play the old course. I've walked it a million times, but I've never actually played it. That's embarrassing for a golf course, a golf writer, I suppose.
Well, like let me know when you're going
to the Sistine Chapel.
Scott and I will be happy to go with you. How's that?
Yeah, yes. We'll work that one out.
I'm all for that one, no doubt about that.
You guys haven't been out there?
Have not. But again, that's on our bucket list as well. What's the one story that you're dying to write that you haven't had a chance to yet?
Whoa, the one story I'm dying to write. Well, I'm working on one now, which I don't know how compelling this will be to the average person, but there's a lot of talk on the PGA Tour. Let me just shut this door because my dog is barking. There's a lot of talk these days on the PGA Tour about slow play. Most recently, Patrick Cantlay, he's been getting a lot of heat for his grinding pre-shot routine. He kind of looks like a lawn statue, not a golfer out there. And every time a PGA Tour player gets called out or an elite player gets called out for slow play, the response is, well, of course, I have to be deliberate. You know, there's a lot of money at stake. There's a lot of prestige at stake. But I think, you know, the underlying logic behind that is probably flawed. I can't prove it, but I'm trying to write a piece on that because I think that the slower and slower play gets, the worse and worse performance gets. There have been some studies that suggest that. But the justification that PGA Tour players offer for their pace of play seems to be turned on its head. They'd probably do better if they played quicker, and then everyone would win. We'd have a faster game that's more interesting to watch, and they'd actually play better. But, you know, I think it's an interesting story about the culture of the game and the way that has changed. You know, I was covering the junior amateur at Bandon last year. The kids were amazing players, but God, the pre-shot routine, they were brutal. And they're getting worse and worse all the time. And when I say worse, they're just getting longer. I clocked one kid who was taking 2.5 minutes before every shot, which should be a penalty, you know?
Right.
There's all sorts of reasons that it wasn't in that event. But, you know, kids are starting to get taught at these junior levels, these grinding pre-shot routines that I'm not an expert on this topic, but I question whether they yield better scores. I would argue that they probably do the opposite. And anybody who's played speed golf knows that when you start playing quicker, you tend to play better because you're not thinking. It seems pretty obvious. But anyway, that's a story I'm working on now, trying to talk to sports psychologists, older golfers, coaches at junior clinics, and the players themselves to try to figure out what's going on there. And have we kind of created this monster that doesn't need to be?
Yeah, and that's interesting because obviously baseball, the whole conversation this year has been about the pitch clock and trying to shorten games and trying to make the game more relevant in today's age. That doesn't bode well for the game of golf if it's extending out like that. And, you know, that's something that the tours do have to enforce better, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, they've been reluctant to in part because the players, in large part because the players think they have to do it. But what if they didn't have to do it? You know, what if everyone could win and you could have better play and faster play at the same time? I don't think that overthinking helps in any sport, but you know, maybe it does for these guys. They've convinced themselves that it does, or they've been taught that way, so it's a habit that's hard to break. But I think that's kind of an interesting way that's sort of seeped into the game at all levels.
I think you might get your biggest argument from the sports psychologist who could be out of a job, huh?
Yeah, I hate to make it sound so simple. Just do it. Get up and hit it. Stop thinking.
It worked for that other company.
Exactly.
Josh Sens, nationally recognized golf writer for Golf Magazine. Thanks so much for being with us. I'd love to have you back on the show. I know there's a lot of other stories that you have that our listeners would be fascinated to hear. And yeah, keep doing what you're doing, and we'll look forward to getting with you down the road.
Thanks for having me, and good luck to the Kings.
Back with more right after this.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sactown Sports.
Welcome back into the Golf to Go Radio Hour here on Sactown Sports 1140. I'm Frank LaRosa. Scott Marsh is my buddy sitting beside. And Scott, talking about golf is not a bad way to spend an hour.
I love talking golf. I could talk well more than an hour about it, Frank.
Okay. Well, you talk to the program director about that. We'll see how we can make that happen.
All right.
Mark Atterbury is a friend of the show and has been on numerous times. And most of you will remember Mark when he comes in to talk about Cleveland and Strixon, because he is the Northern California rep for both of those companies. And Mark is always interesting. He's always fun. And I was looking at his background and realized that Mark also reps MGI, which is a company that manufactures motorized golf carts. And as we get into the summer and as the game of golf becomes more focused in people's minds, you know, Scott, I know this is going to be of interest to you because you're a guy that does like to walk. And when you have the opportunity, you will walk. I enjoy walking, but I don't like carrying my bag. And I'm not really a big fan of push carts as well. So I'm real fascinated to learn what Mark has to tell us. Mark Atterbury, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate you guys taking the time.
Absolutely. As I said, it's always a pleasure. You know, as I mentioned, Scott likes to walk and will do so and carry his bag like a big boy. And, you know, if he could carry my bag too, that'd be great. But but the notion of having a motorized golf a cart, I guess, you know, mm-hmm. to be beside you. That's an interesting concept. Tell us, you know, in your mind, you know, what the benefits are of having a motorized cart and what the benefits are of basically even walking the golf course.
Well, in the modern world, I mean, many of us have our pedometers and step counters. So walking a golf course is one way to add that tally up. We all know that, you know, just being active is a great way just to get a little bit of exercise in. I think for the golfer specifically, you know, walking a golf course can keep us a little more connected to the roots of the game and even potentially a little more involved in where our ball truly lies or where it's going, because you're not just thinking about getting back to the motorized cart and driving your buddy's ball and he forgot that you're 100 yards over on the other side of the fairway. So, you know, it's a nice walk down the middle of the fairway. You get to the right spot and you say, I'll see you in 10 minutes after we both hit our shots, one from the left, one from the right, whatever it might be.
You know, you talk about getting back to the roots. The one thing that I find most fascinating, you know, besides the exercise portion of that, is that as you're walking, you really see what's going on. I mean, you kind of look at your shot. You kind of have an idea of what the next shot's going to be. You're looking around at the surroundings. You have time to actually take things in. I'm thinking about walking a course like Pebble Beach. you know, you get in a cart, you run up to the ball and you don't see anything except the golf cart or the golf cart path. And when you walk, you have an opportunity to enjoy what you're seeing and what you're doing.
It certainly gives you more freedom, I believe, than, yeah, riding in a cart. I mean, you mentioned Pebble Beach, wonderful facility. I had the opportunity and the pleasure of playing it about 2 months ago with my MGI cart. I mean, they are part of what keeps that golf course so beautiful is that they are restrictive to cart path only, as far as I understand, all the time.
Yep.
But that, I don't think that gives you the opportunity to truly see the full course. So I think there's an absolute benefit from being able to walk the course, whether it's with a, you know, an actual caddy or with a motorized, you know, we call the carts caddies, a motorized cart, motorized caddy, motorized trolley, whatever you want to refer to it as. And MGI offers a full range of caddies. Their top of the line is a remote control. So it's something that you don't have to physically interact with. I mean, you don't have to have your hands on it at all times. But they do make opportunities where they make a motorized cart that you don't have a remote. So it is something that you walk along with, but you're not having to push it. I've actually found myself when I'm using mine that, you know, if I'm going up a hill, I can turn that thing on to where it's kind of pulling me up the hill. So it makes my life a little bit easier. Yeah, it's a lot of fun to have. It's a lot of fun to be walking a golf course. And I think it does keep your mind a little more focused on truly where your golf ball is, where you are, where, you know, the nice greenery and scenery around you rather than just zipping up and down in a motorized cart. And I think, you know, you still have the conversational opportunity with your playing partners, especially if one of them has one of the similar, you know, whether it's a push cart or a motorized cart, just it creates a more interactive experience with your foursome rather than just two of you cruising up and down, you know, a cart path in your motorized cart.
Well, and you know, the truth of it is a lot of times if you are playing a course and we're using Pebble Beach as an example where it's cart path only the entire way, you're actually walking more using a cart than if you just walk the course.
I would totally agree. And given the winter that we just had here in Northern California, there are a lot of facilities that are still a little wet and mushy and mud spots. And, you know, if you played golf over the last 3-4 months, January, February, March of 2023 in Northern California, you were going to be cart path only if they even allowed the carts on the course. Right. But yeah, having a, you know, a push cart or a motorized trolley like MGI makes, it makes for a more enjoyable experience.
No doubt. And for me personally, as much as I love the exercise part of it and just helps slow you down as you're playing and everything else, which I think are advantages to me, the number one advantage is, you know, if I'm 50 yards away from my cart to the ball and I don't know what club to play, I hate carrying around 4 or 5 clubs, 50 yards, not knowing what I want to play, and then actually getting to my ball and realizing I don't have the club that I want anyways. And then that frustration of, do I want to walk 50 yards back to my cart to try and get a club? By that point, I'm so frustrated, I just say, forget it, that I hit a bad shot. And then I'm so frustrated after that, that it's like, it really takes away from the enjoyment from me.
Well, and I'll follow up too. You mentioned slowing you down, but it doesn't necessarily slow pace of play, right? That's been a big topic of conversation mm-hmm. since the Masters, a particular PGA pro yeah. being lambasted for being a little slower. But as you mentioned, when you're 50 yards from your golf ball, as you're walking up to it, it does give you a sense of what shot you need to hit. Mm-hmm. You kind of have a club in mind before you even get to the golf ball. I mean, yeah, you might still laser it or, you know, ask a playing partner or look at a sprinkler head for a yardage, but you already have an idea of what you're going to hit rather than just arriving at your ball and, yeah. oh, how far am I, right? Mm-hmm.
There are a number of companies out that make motorized carts, and obviously, you know, you are working with one that you're pretty proud of. Tell us about MGI and the Zip Navigator, which is kind of the most popular model, I guess.
Yeah, so MGI goes back, I mean, they're over 20 years. I've been with the company nearly 6 years myself, but the American market would know them prior to them being an independent operator in North America. They used to manufacture a lot of the electric carts for Bagboy. I don't know the details of the separation necessarily, but MGI 6 years ago decided to go their own way, so they had to hire a new sales force. That worked out well for me. But they now are operating independently of any other brand affiliation or partnership agreements. MGI, they're based in Australia. They are by far and away the number one line of electric caddies in Australia. I think we've got them to be number one in the United States in the 6 years that they've been operating. But MGI stands for Motorized Golf Inc. Pretty, you know, self-explanatory name as to what they are manufacturing. Yeah, they've been around 20 plus years, used to make carts for Boy. They make a full line from, as you mentioned, the Zip Navigator. There's actually a couple of different Zip Navigators too. There's the standard Zip Navigator. Retail is $1,500, got the remote control unit. And then there's another one called the Navigator AT, or All Terrain, that stands for. It's virtually the same cart, but it has a little bit wider wheelbase. So if you play a course that's string hill, it'll give you a little bit more stability in that type of scenario. And then they make three models below the Navigator, the Zip X1, X3, and X5 that are all handheld units. But, you know, to your point, there are other manufacturers of carts. There's plenty of YouTube online reviews, and the Navigator tends to stand out as the top of the line, the MGI. I think one of the things that really separates MGI from other manufacturers is they have a gyroscopic technology within the Navigator and the Navigator AT. And what that does for the golfer is if you hit a bump rolling down the fairway and the cart happens to turn off course, or if you're on a side hill, all the other manufacturers' carts are going to, by default, continue down whatever line they end up on. The MGI, with the gyroscopic technology, that thing will actually maintain a straight line, whether it's on a side hill or if you happen to hit a sprinkler head or a bump or something and it knocked off line, it will self-correct to continue on the line that you have set that cart on.
That's you know, I was looking at some of the information about the cart, and 36-hole battery and two 30-watt motors. I'm not quite sure how two motors work, but I'm sure you got that figured out. But this gyroscope, you know, just, I was really fascinated by that. Tell me about, you know, it seems to me that, when you take these things up and down hills, that's where you have problems with them. But, what has MGI done to counteract that?
Yeah. So the, you know, got a fairly wide rear wheelbase, and then it's got a fairly narrow front wheelbase, essentially like a three wheel cart. Because there are some challenging terrains out there though, there's an additional, if anybody knows what a wheelie bar is, it's essentially a wheelie bar. It's an additional wheel that comes off the back of the cart so that if you are going up a steep hill, you don't end up with the weight falling backwards. It's got that rear wheel on it that just folds out. It's very small, but it keeps that thing stable when you're going up or down a hill. And then MGI also has actually active braking system within the cart. So if you leave the cart on a hill, but it's stopped, it won't just naturally start going down that hill. It has an active braking system. It's using the motors to brake rather than let that cart just roll down by gravity.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about the remote control as well. I mean, an argument can be made that, you know, instead of focusing on your game, you're focusing on the remote control. How easy is it to use, and am I going to have issues with something like that?
No, I think one or two rounds in, it becomes second nature. The remote is very small. I think each golfer can kind of figure out where they're going to carry that remote on their own, what makes most sense for them. I myself, being right-handed, I find myself just leaving it in my right rear pocket. And when you're traversing down a fairway or, you know, just going forward, the cart will operate just with a couple simple pushes of a button, pushing it forward. If you need to turn it, yes, you have to be interactive with the turn button. It doesn't, we can't just push right and it will continue to go right. You've got to kind of direct it right, left. But it's got a real simple stop mechanism. So if you're cruising forward and you just need it to stop, it's got a stop button. It's got a lock button on the remote. So if you're, you know, say you're up on the putting green, it's your turn to putt. You might be up there for 5 minutes and you don't want to accidentally activate the cart. It's got a little lock button that you just press once and then it won't roll in any direction. I mean, the cart is effectively just stopped and parked in that place. But it's a small, you know, the remote's probably 3 inches wide, 4 inches long, 2.5 to 3 inches, something like that. It's fairly small. I mean, it doesn't get in the way of anything. There is a place to store it on the cart, but if you leave it on the cart and you're moving forward, you got to remember that your remote's on the cart. So I always just try to keep mine in my pocket. But yeah, it's simple operation. It may take somebody a round or two to get used to it, but it really becomes second nature once you've played with it once or twice.
No, it sounds fantastic, because there are certain courses, you know, where you want to walk, but it's a challenge to walk if you are pushing your clubs. And so this is just such a great solution that really solves all of those problems.
Yeah. And I, to that point, like I've become part of a group. I've got the opportunity. I think many of us in Northern California, there's that annual trip up to Bandon Dunes up in Oregon. Yeah. Those courses are walking only. I mean, there is literally great. Not a cart option. And if you want a caddy, great, but it's, you know, it's $150 a round or whatever it is for a caddy. Not to brag, but hey, I was there a month ago, and I used my MGR cart for every round of golf.
Yeah.
Frank touched on it a moment ago, the 36 hole battery. I went 36 on two straight days without issue. You just got to remember to plug it in overnight. And really, even after the 36 holes, the battery indicator on the cart showed that I probably still had another 18 that I could go, but they're not going to guarantee that you're going to get 54 or 72 out of one charge.
Yeah.
But 36 out of a single charge is an absolute.
The other thing people would ask about, I suppose, is, you know, are these things big, heavy? You know, how do I get it in my trunk? What's the warranty? Stuff like that.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. So the carts carry a 3-year warranty. The warranty, if there is a warranty issue, it's handled direct by MGI. They have a real simple online process to register the cart and interact with the company if you do ever come across any kind of warranty needs, but it is warranted for 3 years. The folding mechanism is quite simple. It's much like any other 2 or 3 wheel cart where it's just got a couple of levers, folds down to a very small, compact size. For anybody that's interested, you could look that up on, you know, Google or YouTube or whatever. There's videos online that show how the cart folds down. Overall weight, yes, because it's got motors and a battery, it's going to weigh more than a 2 or 3 wheel cart, but it's still not so cumbersome that you can't lift it. I mean, it's easy, something you can load into the trunk of your car, you can load it into the back of your pickup, whatever it is. But it folds down quite compact. I mean, it is not any larger than any of the popular 3-wheel carts that are out there these days. You know, it's maybe about 1.5 feet cubed all the way around when it's folded down.
I know this might be a tougher question to answer, and it varies based on model, all that. But can you give us a basic price range of what somebody would be looking at?
Yeah, so the Zip Navigator is the one that we're largely focusing on. The American market has largely dictated that consumers want a unit that has a remote. And that retails for $1,500. And it does come with an included accessory package. So your umbrella holder, drink holder. It comes with some wheel covers. I mean, let's face it, the wheels can get a little dirty or covered in goose droppings. And you don't want that all over your car. So it comes with wheel covers. There's other accessories available too. So you can spend more than $1,500. But the base unit with the included accessories is $1,500. The Navigator AT or all-terrain model is $100 more. It's $1,600. And then the lesser units, which are available, but again, we don't find ourselves selling that many in the U.S. market. Those are the units that you have to, you know, keep in contact with. But they'll range in price from, I think, on the low end, about $700 up to $1,100. So, you know, it's not a small investment, but it is something that if you play one round of golf per week, 50 rounds a year, the average cost per round for, you know, whether you're renting a cart, renting a push cart, you can pay that thing off. You can justify the cost at least reasonably quick if you're an avid golfer.
Oh, no question. And for people who are updating their clubs every couple, 2-3 years types of things like that, that's just the cost of doing business if you like golf.
Yeah, absolutely. And God bless them, because it keeps our industry afloat.
I think I know what's on Scott's bucket list.
Absolutely.
We'll have to do some kind of funding project for that. Mark Atterbury, you're always the best. I appreciate you spending some time with us on the Golf to Go Radio Hour. MGI is the name of the company. Take a look. What's the website?
us.mgigolf.com.
All right, there you have it. Back with more on the Golf to Go Radio Hour right after this.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sactown Sports.
Golf to Go Radio Hour continues here on Sactown Sports 1140. I'm Frank LaRosa, and I'd like to welcome in Mr. David Curtis. He is a PGA teaching professional at the Pete Dye course at the Westin Rancho Mirage, where I had a chance to play when I visited the desert. David, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Doing great, Frank. Thanks for having me on today.
Absolutely. You know, we talk about you teaching at the Pete Dye course in Rancho Mirage, but as it turns out, you're right now here in Sacramento or in the Sacramento area at Yochidihi, teaching at one of your golf schools. What's that all about?
Yeah, so I'm fortunate enough with Troon, who I work for, the management company, I'm able to kind of go up to a property and possibly start a golf school or an instruction program. So in 2019, I was able to give this property a try. And typically what we look for is a beautiful golf course, hotel accommodations, and obviously a driving range or a short game area that can host a group of people.
Boy, check, check, and check, huh? I mean, Yocha D, he is an incredible property and a wonderful range. And with Cache Creek there, you got it all going on for you.
Yep, absolutely. It's pretty much a slam dunk. I mean, the food and beverage operation's amazing. The hotel accommodations are great. The golf course staff is wonderful. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a very awesome service. Hands down, one of the best properties that I teach at.
Let's talk a little bit about your teaching in the desert, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the school. But I would imagine at a resort course, you're seeing everybody from people that are in there for one day, as opposed to somebody spending a couple of weeks there, to regulars that live there in town. How do you distinguish your lessons any differently with any of those people, or do you just kind of try and correct something and get them on their way?
Well, so for let's go for the resort guests, for example. I mean, they want the quick fix,
yeah.
Right? So let's say they come in slicing. We know they're swinging in the direction. Let's say if it's a righty, they're swinging left with an open club face, right? So that kind of makes the slice makeup. So if we can give them an idea of how to close the club face or fix their grip in a 50-minute lesson, they're jumping for joy. We're high-fiving on the yeah. lesson tee, and then we say, you know, have a good stay. Hopefully we'll see you again when you come back. And then I have my locals, I have my residents that stay there for year round, or they're there for the season, we call it, for about 6 months out of the year. And so we kind of put a game plan together for them. If maybe it's a lesson a week, or they do every other week, we just kind of make a plan for them. And if they want to do short game, we work on that, or we do driver one lesson, or I take them on the golf course and play a couple holes with them. So it's a mixture. And I also have little drop-in clinics that we do. If someone doesn't want to do pay the price for a full lesson, they can hop into a group session for a pretty cheap price and get a couple nuggets to help them in the game.
Sure. How long have you been a teaching professional, and do you have a theory about teaching, or is every student different?
Yeah, so I like a few of the main big wigs in the golf industry. Just like there's the Butch Harmon style, there's the Mike Bender style, there's Jim McClain. I mean, of course, I'm going to kind of take some ideas from them and present it. And then also, you know, every single golfer is different. I mean, you can't say, hey, swing this way if someone has a bad shoulder, or they're dealing with a frozen shoulder or something, right? So, or their rotation's not that great. So to me, I'm more of a, let's get your hands, let's get your forearms and wrist angles moving in the correct direction to square the club face up the best we possibly can, so that the ball really doesn't curve that much. So, if someone wants to play a little bit of a less of a slice, you know, if we get them to fade it, it's a victory.
Sure.
Yeah.
Do you see one thing over and over with amateurs? Is there one thing that we weekend golfers seem to all have the same issue going on?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say the difference that makes a really good ball striker, so let's call it, you know, like maybe like a 7 handicap and below, I would call that a good ball striker. And anybody above that, what I typically see is they're not using the ground very well. So a lot of golfers, what I see is they make a backswing and they're staying way too far on their trail side. They're staying there way too long, and then they make an action with their upper body, and then their lower body's last, right? So, like, you know, if we're throwing a baseball or if we're throwing a football, you're not throwing off your back foot, unfortunately. So it's if we can use the ground a little bit earlier and kind of work off of that and start swinging the golf club, then you're going to hit it a little bit better, a little bit further, and the club will swing faster.
Yeah, it's an interesting notion of staying on your back foot, because many, I see many of the people I play with doing it and with very different swings, but it's, as you say, the issue of getting over to the left side. Tell me a little bit about the teaching schools at Yochadihi, because I understand that you'll be doing them throughout the summer, maybe even into the fall. And there's an opportunity for local people here in the Sacramento area to get involved in those.
Yes, absolutely. So we originally started off, our first round was in 2019, and we only had five dates scheduled for a short time, just to see how it was going to turn out and see what kind of signups we had. And it was a home run. So we got ready for the next season in 2020. We sold out, I think, three or four schools. And guess what happened?
Right.
We had to just kind of cancel everything. And then the following year, just with staffing and everybody was still kind of, once again, not around. Some of the restrictions were still in place. So we kind of bagged 2021. And then last year, 22, we scheduled 10 dates throughout the season. And it was a big success. So then with Will Faust, the director of golf, with Chris Sheffield, the head professional, we got together and said, look, I think we can do it again, but let's front load the season. So we added a couple more dates earlier on this year. So I'm in my second school for April. I have two coming up in May, and then after that, it'll be one school a month until October, which I'll have two schools back to back. So if anybody needs any information on it, Yochadihi Golf Club, just go to the website there, and you can see on the instruction side, you can see the Golf Academy. You can sign up. You can see our little pamphlet that we have, what we offer. It's 3 days. It's intense. We have 3 hours of instruction. And are you beating balls for 3 hours? No, we break it up. We do an hour and a half of full swing, hour and a half of short game. So we kind of pick some pieces throughout the day there. And then we have nice lunch. And then we'll go on the golf course with you, which is a really cool experience. So we're out there for 9 holes and just kind of making sure you're doing the right shot or you're picking the right club in the right situation. We're doing a lot of green reading out there, and it's a pretty cool experience, because that's our feedback that we get a lot of. It's like, man, that 9 holes with you, that was so fun. I haven't done that with a pro at all. So, but getting everybody out on the golf course after the lesson is super important, just to see if they can transfer the idea.
That's such a great experience for most players, because I think, you know, especially weekend players, they'll pick up a club and hit it as far as they can and not really kind of manage the golf course. And that kind of feedback from you, I'm sure, is valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a good time with it. Everybody wants to pound that driver, but some holes are saying, hey, hit a hybrid because there's no trouble 200 yards out.
Yeah. David Curtis, PGA teaching professional at the Pete Dye course at the Westin in Rancho Mirage, up here at Yochadihi, probably through the fall. Check with their website and get in one of those 3-day schools. That sounds like a lot of fun. David, I appreciate your time. Thanks for being with us today.
Perfect. Thanks, Frank. And thanks for all you do for the golf industry.
Thank you so much. Thanks to David, to Josh Sens, and to Mark Atterbury, all my guests today on the Golf to Go Radio Hour. Back next week with more. Get out in the fairway, get out and have some fun. Keep it in the middle. If not, you know, figure out a way to get it back in the middle. Have a good time.